How's it going, everybody? Happy Friday. The weekend is here. NHL draft weekend. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. And tonight we'll be on the air at 8 o'clock. Myself, Dean Brown, and Steve Lloyd alongside Hammer. Take you through round one of the draft, which will kick off the Buffalo Sabres in all likelihood taking Owen Power. Who are the Sens going to take at number 10? And we'll find out right here on TSN 12. And we'll hear from that draft pick as well as part of our draft coverage. We'll look forward to that. If you're a Sens fan, make sure you're tuned in tonight, again, beginning at 8 o'clock. And we'll have coverage of rounds 2 through 7 tomorrow morning, starting at 11 a.m. All right, Dave Poulin, TSN Hockey Insider, will join us to talk about a couple of trades yesterday and all the draft stuff. He'll join us in an hour from now. And then more draft coverage. TSN's Craig Button will join us in 2 hours from now after 9 o'clock. But right now, we're going to do hockey, junior hockey style. Longtime OHL Commissioner Dave Branch joins us this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline this morning. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing real well. Great to be with you, fine gentlemen. Yes. On this very exciting weekend, as you kind of described, with the entry draft and other such happenings. So, it's a great weekend.
It is, and it's always fun for you, I'm sure, to see some of your players graduate. Although this has got to be a little bit surreal, the fact that your league didn't play any hockey this year, and you're going to see players from your league get drafted into the National Hockey League. How does that all circulate in your head and work itself out?
Well, I mean, it just shows the resourcefulness of our players, first of all, to continue to train and prepare. I mean, when you look at the World Under 18, which was held in Dallas a couple of months ago, and Team Canada was made up of, I believe it was 13 OHL players, and we won World Under 18 Championship. And it just shows that today's athlete is so much better, shall we say, prepared and informed. And I know in talking, and so they've been able to overcome some adversity here. And this has been a great life lesson for them and everyone involved. Life is not always goes in a straight line for you, and you have to be prepared at all times. And in credit to the National Hockey League, they felt comfortable on their preparation and what their wants and needs were in terms of understanding which OHL players they should consider taking and so forth. So it's moving forward. We'll see how it goes, shall we say, on the entry draft. But you know what? I think overall we've been able to fight our way through this. And we're all excited as we appear to be coming clearly near the end of the runway in terms of preparing for next season, the upcoming season, and we're also very excited about that.
Yeah, on that, Dave, it'll be, and when you guys take to the ice, your league, 18 months pretty much between when you had to shut down and when you'll reopen. What as you kind of ponder that, what has that been like?
Well, it's one of the great things about my position, my involvement with the OHL, people will say to me, "Boy, don't you get tired doing the same thing?" And you know what? It's never the same thing. And this has been the extreme. I mean, the agenda every season changes. There's always new challenges and issues. It keeps everyone fresh and on their toes, as they say. And so this has been the past, like as you say, 18 months has been unprecedented. And we learned a lot, and I think what we've all tried to do is, take some of the positives that we've learned through this and build on that and move forward for the betterment of our game, our players, our fans, our communities. So it's looking forward to obviously getting started again. Labor Day weekend, we will have our training camps open, and then our season schedule commences on the 7th of October. And that in itself is another signal of changes we've made as a result of the pandemic. Latest start we've had or ever had, and our season is running a little deeper into May and June with the Memorial Cup. So, hey, you evolve. You continue to meet the challenges and understand, what the needs and wants are, once again, back to our players and our fans.
Dave, I know it wasn't the motivation, but if you review back to last year, you've got individual owners. What is it the smartest thing also financially to not play, just to not take any heavy hit and basically take a toll on some of the franchises?
Well, you know what? I mean, the one thing that our owners and the league as a whole decided very early on, it wasn't going to be any stories of poor me. Because we recognized that the pandemic was affecting everybody. And, you know, families, jobs, homes, businesses were all in peril. And so we were no different. And I can tell you that, you know, we did not save money, so to speak, by not playing. All our teams lost considerable sums of money to sustain their operations to the extent they did with the coaching and marketing staffs and scouting staffs, etc. So not to belabor the point, but we had a lot of financial challenges as a league, as individual teams, when we did not play. And there was never a decision made not to play based on the financial model. It was just the health and safety of our players.
OHL Commissioner Dave Branch is our guest. Dave, you and your league announced earlier this week a vaccination policy. Can you explain to our listeners exactly what that entails and why you decided to do it?
Well, in simple terms, we defined the OHL community as players, staff, coaches, on and off ice officials, and billets. And that OHL community, in order to participate in the OHL, you must be fully vaccinated. And that was done for the, once again, for the health and welfare of our players. And I think we've all seen different steps and initiatives taken by the Canadian government about the need to be fully vaccinated. I know we've received you know, a lot of support with working towards that end. We see the need. We all see the need. Once again, back to a picture much broader than hockey. I mean, we need to continue to get vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and it's really important. We wanted to, mitigate as much by way of risk for our players and staff by having this policy in place. We just felt it was an important step. We saw the announcement from the federal government this week about an order for Americans, as an example, to enter our country, and that'll be permitted on or around the 9th of August. One of the qualifications is to be fully vaccinated. For our players to cross the border, then that's going to be a prerequisite, whether to play or in many cases, to go to NHL training camps, et cetera, et cetera. So it was the right thing to do, and we built in some accommodation that if there is any issues around health reasons that a young person may have or staff member may have and or religious reason, they will be considered, and we've got an independent medical advisor to assist us in that area.
Dave, floated out yesterday was a kind of critique on, a one-off rule. If any of the underage players had played 20 games in the American League last year, they would be exempt. I kind of combed through it and looked at Perfetti, Byfield, and Drysdale. I don't know if anybody from the Quebec League or Western League. Will that pass? And I guess just thoughts on that ruling?
Well, once again, that is a byproduct, really, of what the pandemic created. And The rule as well that the National Hockey League has discussed with us, it was really, it did not include Western Hockey League or Quebec Major Junior Hockey League players, because all of those players returned and played in their respective CHL teams. So it does not apply in that instance. It's only those players who were of junior age who ended the season in the American Hockey League. So it's an additional hardship. We recognize that, but we just felt on the short term it was the right thing to do. And so those players will have the opportunity if they and or their NHL team wishes to place them in the American Hockey League this coming season. We have an undertaking that it will be for this coming season only, because the hockey community recognizes that the OHL is the number one development league in the world, and one of the building blocks for that is the great competition that we have. And certainly the NHL wishes to sustain us as the best development league and not impair going forward the opportunity for players to prepare themselves for professional hockey.
We have seen a trend in the last 10 years of 19-year-olds of European or even college go to the American League, Dave, and now it gets floated out from the CHL's perspective. Is that something that you would be adamant and be against in future, of having 19-year-old first-round picks play in the American Hockey League?
That is correct. We feel if a player is ready to play in the NHL at age 19, so be it. And that's why we're here. That's why we, we embrace that opportunity. But for the good of the player, and you can't lose sight of the player here in terms of making sure they're protected, not only on the ice, but off the ice. The environment that our teams have in terms of building not only hockey players, but young people with the Billet Family Program, our scholarship program, our mental health programs, on and on and on. It's so important that young people move forward when they're ready and are prepared to do so mentally and physically.
Dave, one of our listeners just texted me and raised an interesting question, of course, with your league playing no hockey last year, and there wasn't an opportunity for kids going into their overage year to play. Was there ever any consideration to, I guess it would be the year 2000 birth year kids, to play an extra year, or is that just, for whatever reason, just a non-starter for you and your league?
Yes, that was one of the real byproducts of great concern, was the effect on the overage player, not giving them the opportunity to complete their career in the OHL properly, shall we say. There was a lot of discussion, a lot of consideration, and the trickle-down effect and the impact of creating another year for them to play would be considerable, and we needed to have all three leagues on side in order to do that because of Memorial Cup competition and everything else. So at the end of the day, it just didn't seem to be reasonable to try and accommodate that situation. I think the good thing is that we have seen, in the case of the OHL overage players, the continued flow of opportunities for them to either play U Sport and access their OHL scholarship, or in many cases as well, sign with NHL teams and minor pro teams.
Dave, has there been any thought to expand the number of overage players, or are you happy even in the crazy pandemic world that three is good enough?
Yeah, I mean, it's a number that, we discuss from time to time as well. The National Hockey League plays a role in that, and they want us to develop, the younger player, per se. And so they would rather not see us expand the number of overage players. And right now, moving forward, and in the foreseeable future, I would suggest that's exactly where we'll be.
Dave, also, just to wrap up, I want to ask you about the Ottawa 67s. And boy, tough couple of years for them where they had championship teams. But just thought on Dave Cameron returning to the Ontario Hockey League. And how excited are you for Andre Tournier? Like the players, nice to see him go to the National Hockey League.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's with mixed feelings for sure when you see Andre Tournier leave, but he was, very special coach and a great proven track record. Great for him, good for him. We just saw Trevor Letowski leave the Windsor Spitfires to join the Montreal Canadiens as an assistant coach. But on the other side, it opens an opportunity for someone else. And kudos to the 67s. In my view, James Boyd and the ownership group of OSAG did a fabulous job in securing Dave Cameron. His strengths and values are ideal for the OHL. He's a teacher of hockey. He's a teacher of life. His background is incredible with experience when you look at OHL NHL, Europe. So not only is it a gain for the 67s, but our entire league, and it's really important. And I reached out to Dave a couple of days ago and congratulated him, and as well to have him secure a position as head coach of our national junior team. Fabulous.
Last one for you. Earlier this week, it was also announced that TSN is. I know you're no longer the president of the CHL, but your fingerprints are all over junior hockey, and I'm sure you were consulted on this. But has announced a partnership with the CHL to become the new host broadcaster of junior hockey games from across the country, and leading up to and including the Memorial Cup. What are your thoughts on that?
Extremely exciting. Dan McKenzie, the new president of the CHL. One of his real strengths, in my view, is his knowledge of broadcast and today's world. And kudos to Dan. And it's a great partnership with TSN. And we're really, really excited as we continue to grow the CHL-OHL brand.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate your time, Dave. I know it's the middle of summer, but I'm sure you're very excited to get your league back up and running, as you said. Labor Day is not that far away, and the new season to begin in early October. Thanks for the time this morning, and enjoy your weekend.
Well, hey, I appreciated the opportunity, and everyone stay well.
There's Dave Branch, the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at gabrielpizza.com.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get back to normal, JR, and just brings back memories. Labor Day weekend, flying to the Sioux for training camp, so great for them. And boy, for the Ottawa 67s, forget about the financial component, couple of championship teams, and in bringing Dave Cameron back, a great way to rebrand yourself as you lose your coach, lose a lot of players where they'd somewhat become familiar in the community, right, at the junior level. Didn't have that for a little while, so they'll have to get back to work, and I'm sure they'll rebuild and reload once again, but a couple of years there where they could have won a Memorial Cup.
Mid-80s flight from Ottawa to Sault Ste. Marie, Bearskin Airlines? Or is that too early for that?
No. It would have been, you know, it's funny. I think 85, I can remember John Stanton Sr., myself and Mike Glover, Steve Bisson, Barry Taylor, Mike Zork. We had a whole bunch of guys from Ottawa. There was a direct flight in 85, JR, Air Canada.
Really?
Well, yeah. So I remember we got on the bird.
How big was the plane?
It wasn't a bad size, actually.
Really?
I don't think, again, that's 36 years ago. I don't think they had cut back, but I can tell you by the following year, uh-huh. I can remember after the World Junior, I didn't have a Christmas. I got to go home. I started doing the Bearskin. I started going Ottawa to, I believe, or Sault Ste. Marie to North Bay and then yep. North Bay to Ottawa.
Oh, there's no Sudbury stop.
Well, there was one or the other. It wasn't both.
Yes, okay.
And then also I remembered flying Ottawa to Toronto and then Toronto to the Sioux. So,
I have a friend, and Bearskin Airlines, I don't think still exists, the story of flying from Sudbury to Ottawa with the stop in North Bay. He ends up being the only person left on the North Bay to Ottawa leg.
Yeah.
Lands in Ottawa, no luggage. Yeah, the only passenger on the plane.
Come on. And you're also in that plane if you flow in those. Those are the 8-seaters, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're basically, you're all family at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've never realized what a plane does in the air, you realize watching out the cockpit window on those ones.
You're looking at you're looking at the size of the pilot going, okay, do I want to be on the same side of the plane as the pilot, or do I want to be in the air? I want to balance things out here.
Well, and when you land, you don't understand. You're actually sideways. Like in a small plane, you're coming in sideways. I was flying into Portland, Maine. I'm like, wow, this is how you do it. And I'm like, I think we're going to touch down properly. And sure enough, as soon as you touch the ground, boom, just readjust.
All right. 727. Thoughts on what Dave Branch had to say. Always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll get you all the latest on the NHL draft weekend. Who signed yesterday? There were a couple of trades to go through. And we'll hear from the likes of Pierre Dorion, Mark Bergevin as well, weighing in on the whole Shea Weber, Carey Price story, so we can chat about that as well. And Kyle Dubas. Kyle Dubas is a believer. I'm a believer, man. Was it the Monkees? I'm a believer. Kyle Dubas is a believer in his team. And we'll get into that as well as we roll on here for a Friday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Back 7:35 here. J.R. Simmer and Hammer on TSN 1200. Again, live coverage of the draft coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Myself, Steve Lloyd, and Dean Brown will take you through the first round of the NHL draft, since sitting at pick number 10. More on the draft coming up with Craig Button, TSN Chief Scout, after 9 this morning. Some wrenches on this wrench throwing Friday that have come in at 12-1200. That's how you text us. And when you do text us, standard messaging rates apply. Hey, fellas, can I get a wrench, please, to the National Hockey League for that debacle in Seattle on Wednesday night? Thanks.
We're going with the boy Cali, though.
There you go. I need a what happened wrench to the Kraken for not taking Carey Price for the simple fact just to give it to the Habs. Makes no sense. That's from Schmoberger.
What happened?
And along those same lines, I want to throw a wrench to Seattle for not picking Carey Price. Would have been epic to witness the Habs fans' meltdown from unsigned.
Starting in goal, number 31, Corey Price.
What is that from?
I think that's an all-star game.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it must be. But I, as it sits, JR, I know early on, but in the long term, the better play if you're a Sens fan is the fact they didn't take Carey Price. So early on, it may hurt a little bit, but I think long term, it's going to hurt the Canadians a whole lot more.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Carey Price, of course, the story that came up after it was announced that the Habs weren't going to protect him was the fact that, oh by the way, the draft is Wednesday. Thursday, Carey's got a meeting with the doctors in New York regarding his knee and hip, and it could be serious. It could be out for months if it requires surgery. And then there's Marc Bergevin yesterday after the expansion draft, and Carey Price isn't taken. Oh, by the way, it doesn't look that bad on Carey. Maybe 6 to 8 weeks, so probably won't end up missing any of the season. So that's convenient how that all worked itself out.
Yeah, it is.
So that was the good news.
Yeah, a little funny. But I do believe in the case of last year, he's had multiple concussions, hips and knees. You hear the Stefan Waite stuff that was talked about, JR. But if he comes back and is a goaltender along with Mr. Allen for what may be lost in Deneau to Tatar to Mr. Weber, well, it's certainly going to help the franchise. There's no doubt about it.
There was some positive news as well regarding the Habs, by the way, on Jonathan Drouin, as we know, took a leave of absence from the team midway through this past season. Marc Bergevin said that he expects Jonathan Drouin, who's feeling better, to be at training camp. So I had wondered whether Seattle would actually take Jonathan Drouin, which, of course, they did not. But wondered whether it might be in his best interest. And again, we don't know the specifics. It was said to be a mental health issue, but did that have to do with, dealing with, the pressures of playing in Montreal? That was that all part of it? Whether it might be best, whether he and his agent might say, hey, maybe it's best for us to move on. At least from Marc Bergevin's point of view, sounds like maybe that wasn't part of the equation.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he'll be in Montreal.
It's really interesting, JR, and you trace back to the craziness in Tampa Bay, and I think over-agent by Mr. Walsh when he went to Syracuse, decided to go home, took a long time where Tampa Bay was nervous to move him. Well, they remove him, and the trade hasn't even been close. And I said at the time, be careful going back to Montreal. Talk to Stéphane Richer, a lot of pressure. If you're Marc Bergevin, and I like this, and go back to Nazem Kadri and the struggles he had, JR. If you can work with a young man and you can become a better player. Now, if he said to you at the end of the day, listen, I got to get out of Montreal, that's fine. But let's also look at the business side. You gave up Sergachev. If you're moving him along at this point in expansion, you're getting nothing back. If they can get him up and running, he's confident. Hey, he's still in the prime of his career, still very talented. So it could be a real good boost for the Montreal Canadiens and for the human being aspect. I hope this works out. You certainly don't wish ill will. And I'll also say it will be his first opportunity to play under his a former junior coach in Dominic Ducharme, who was basically brought in for this purpose. So for lots of different reasons, this could work quite well, not to mention the emergence of Mr. Caulfield, Mr. Kotkaniemi, and Mr. Suzuki as well. That's a pretty good dynamic four on paper.
So positives on Carey Price's health, it would seem, and on Jonathan Drouin. The news on Shea Weber, pretty much confirmed, and this story had come out, that Shea Weber will miss all of next season. Here's Habs GM Marc Bergevin on Shea Weber.
Well, it was hard for Shea. I mean, that's all he knows. It's, he's a hockey player to the core. He's been doing that all his life, and it's really hit hard to realize that he can no longer perform the way he's expecting for him and his teammates and the pain he's going through daily. So we had an emotional, deep conversation, and I know deep down that you can never replace Shea Weber.
There you go. And in that, Marc Bergevin did also confirm that Shea Weber will miss all of next season. Mm-hmm. And he, I don't remember the exact word he used. I don't remember now, but very good possibility Shea Weber will not play hockey again.
Yeah, and it went through yesterday, JR. It was just fun to kind of do the tail of the tape between him and PK Subban and listed the games played, listed the money, the points. And for a trade at the time, got to be honest with you, I thought, okay, for 1 year, Weber will be the better player. For the 5 years it was done, clearly to me, Montreal ended up winning the trade. What will be interesting now, as the National Hockey League enters in, the insurance companies enter in, the cap recapture, the terminology, whether or not he's on long-term IR or retires. Of course, long-term IR, can he pass all of that and continue to collect the rest of his money in his contract? And at the same time, how are they going to handle this with the cap recapture with Nashville and Montreal and everybody involved?
Yeah. And you wonder whether Gary Bettman, you know, if Lou Lamoriello was running the, and David Poile is a longtime executive and very well thought of, if Lou Lamoriello was running the Nashville Predators, you know, Gary would say, you know, we'll let this one slide. There won't be a cap recapture. Yeah. And fans in Vancouver would like a word because they're still paying, they had 3 years of $3 million on Roberto Luongo. Yeah. Yeah. That being said, I mean, if things are as bad with Shea Weber as they've been said to be, we have seen other guys go on long-term injured where you go, you like for years and years where you're kind of going, I mean, the insurance company signed off on that. Like the Shea Weber stuff sounds serious enough that absolutely it sounds you know, that is career ending. And if so, why would Shea Weber retire? Why not go on long term? Because you're going to get your money.
Oh, absolutely, right? Jared. And then the other,
all of your money.
And the other part, if you go on long term IR, it doesn't always mean that the insurance company's paying it. When you go back to what Toronto was doing, because they're a wealthy club, there was never a moment that they claimed the Lupul situation as insurance. So that's where you know he wasn't really injured. They just said, listen, you're on long term IR, don't come back, but we're going to pay your salary. So how Shea Weber handles it, and I have a soft spot for David Poile, but I'll use a couple examples I used last week with Lloydy. When I was in Washington, we sent Yager before 2004 to the Rangers, we were picking up $5 million in the salary. When the salary cap came in after the lockout in 05, that disappeared off of Washington's books. Like $5 million gone. We also, or when they brought Semin back, the rest of his entry-level contract disappeared. So there are examples. And then the other part, I got to be quite honest with you. First of all, I love David Poile. That offer sheet that was done by Philadelphia, I don't think it's fair to Nashville. They took a, you know, a major kick in having to pay all that signing bonus money. I know it's the rules, JR, but you know, they never did that contract. Then to penalize them at the end of Shea Weber's career, I personally don't think is fair, but I know it's the rules.
Right. So that is the update on Shea Weber. So not to play hockey in the coming season. Yeah. That seems confirmed now. And that does free up, by the way, him going on long-term injured, about $7.8 million in salary cap space. And you have to wonder, and the word came out as soon as the Weber news yesterday of, Montreal's making some inquiries about Dougie Hamilton, whose price tag is likely to come in, depending on how many teams are involved, at least probably $8 to maybe $9 million per season on a long-term deal. Yeah. So would you see, you know, on the surface, it would seem like not a fit, right? Dougie Hamilton doesn't seem like the type of guy who wants to be in the fishbowl and wants to be under the microscope as a player, et cetera. No. You know, he's really found his spot in, you know, in Carolina and, you know, under the radar team where there's not a lot of pressure. It'll be interesting. Do you think that Dougie Hamilton would ever be a fit? Do you ever see it happening in Montreal?
Well, for Montreal, I do, JR, and I really feel like the timing of this for where the franchise is at, Deneau's going to walk out to Tatar, but if Durand does come back and you say to yourself, hey, I love Shea Weber to death, but people talked about how great he played in the playoffs. He did. He's a warrior, but he's not the player he used to be. If you could ever do this, and now they're going to have to overpay, so on a 7-year deal, my estimate is they're going to have to go to $9 million. What does the rest of the market look like? But I absolutely see Montreal taking a hard run. Is he interested? And what are the other offers out there? You know, is it so much more? Or, you know, is he being offered 7x8 with other teams that are a lot easier to go to and a lot less pressure? But, well, I think this is a perfect fit. And from a momentum standpoint, I could totally see Bergevin doing this.
Meanwhile, Pierre Dorion spoke at length yesterday, mostly asked about the draft and what the Sens are going to do at number 10 and about the goalies, but also with the expansion draft now in the rearview mirror and Ottawa losing Joey Decord, but therefore not losing Evgeny Dadonov and Chris Tierney in particular, and their rather massive paydays for the coming season. And in Dadonov's case, the next two seasons, Pierre Dorion was asked about the futures of those two players in particular.
Well, we see them, both of them, having a bounce back year for our hockey team next year. Obviously, there were some things with Evgeny, you know, not having his family here, moving to a new place, you know, the he had to isolate for quite a long time when he first got here, new teammates. So we definitely feel that Evgeny's going to have a strong bounce back here. And the previous year, Chris Tierney was our leading scorer. So I think both have the talent, both have the drive to definitely have bounce back years for us.
Are you buying, specifically on what he had to say about Dadonov, are you buying any of those excuses?
I'm buying on both, Jer, and I'm only in the sense that, first of all, I don't think there's a market for either player, but in what he's saying, absolutely. And I think behind the scenes, and I don't, Dadonov, I'm absolutely, because I've lived it, I know it, but even more on Tierney is that the physical evidence was there. I don't understand why he dropped off, and I have to think it's COVID related. In the case of Dadonov, yeah, I mean, the club knows him better now. Is he going to put the work in? Part of what I saw was a drop-off. But no, hey, like I said, for what he's selling yesterday, I'm buying, Jer. Now, am I banking on it? I'm in a wait-and-see mode, but I totally get what he's saying. In the world that we lived in last year and for what he went through, I could totally see some of those situations. And man, oh man, if he in particular, because Tierney, all I would want is out of him is, hey, can you come in and be a good fourth-line center, a good penalty killer? Mm-hmm. In the case of Dadonov, if he can come back and be the player he was in Florida 2 years ago, well, to me, then Ottawa starts to set up as a pretty nice group up front.
Wow, I am I'm actually shocked that you answered that way, because that sounds like right out of the excuses 101 playbook from the general manager who overpaid for a player who didn't pay off for him, and you're going, yeah, I totally, yeah, you know, well, family wasn't here, it was a weird year, new teammates, you know, that was kind of that's kind of like 1, 2, 3, 4 in the list of anybody you want to make an excuse for.
No, exactly, but I'm also the person a year ago when he signed was saying what a great player he was and how much I loved him in Florida. Now I also said that about Stepan, but I hadn't watched Stepan as much, Jer. I was more like, hey, can he come and be a leader? I really thought Dadonov was a really nice player in Florida. Now, I am nervous about the age, and to me, when I watched him drop off last year, and where I will double back a bit, is that I saw some physical deterioration late in the season that I didn't see in Florida, which does at 32 make me nervous, but when this guy signed and when I watched him in Florida all the time, I thought, I recognize who he's playing with, but I also thought he was a hell of a player. So, you know, like I say, that's a bit of my rationale for bringing a little glass half full, but I also know what you're saying right there. But in the case of Chris Tierney, like I said, never a great skater, but for it to drop as much as it did last year, JR, maybe he is, you know, if that's the same player coming back, well, it's touch and go whether or not he can play. But it is strange that that just happened to, what, a 27-year-old?
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, well, listen, at this point, if they get anything out of, in my opinion, if they get anything out of Dadonov, it almost becomes a bonus at this stage, because I have in my mind mentally when I kind of scratch in who's going to play for the Sens. I got this guy as a placeholder on the third line, which is what he's here for.
No, God, no. No, and if he does come in and play well, boy, the competition on that side, because if you see Connor Brown, the way he finished, to Batherson, to that, and as I said, I'm also going to come to training camp and watch him, JR, and I'm not going to pretend, and I'm not pretending to sit here saying, oh, absolutely, lock it down, because I'm also the person, if I could move him, I'd still move him. What I'm also turning the page on is I don't think with $11.5 million left that it's even realistic that he's going anywhere. So it's more like, okay, let's follow. I'm going to, for now, follow along in what's being said. Going to go to training camp, and I'm going to watch the preseason, and I'll reevaluate then.
Speaking of general managers who are speaking up for their players, Kyle Dubas also spoke yesterday, the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who do not look like they're going to be making many, if any, significant moves, because I'm a believer, man.
For better or worse, I believe in this group, and I believe that they are going to get it done, and I believe that they're going to win. And I understand that comes with certain doubt because of the fact that we have not broken through in the playoffs, but it's my belief that they will. I believe in them as players. I believe in them as people. And I know that that decision lies on me and the risk is for me and going ahead that way. So I'm comfortable with it. I believe that we're going to see the best version of this group next season that we've seen yet.
He's also a general manager of a team that's basically locked in because of contracts to the team that he's got. Like he, outside of trading Austin Matthews for five pieces or whatever, which you're never going to do in a million years, they are what they are, and they're not going to, you know, what Toronto is going to be doing is just unfortunately, due to the way they've structured their cap, they're just going to keep losing players. Yeah. So he has to say that. I understand that. Whether he believes it or not, I mean, he talked a good game there, at least.
It sure feels like it, and I'm shocked. And this will also go back to JR when he was hired. And I know everybody said when him and Shaka Khan were drafted that it's fresh and it's new. I respect that. I think people coming in any industry is awesome. I also know by my own experience, you learn on the job. First job as a general manager in the National Hockey League, saw John Ferguson go through it. He has learned on the job. He has not done a good job. He is headed for an absolute collision. This is Davy Crockett at the Alamo. This team does not have any foundation of anything that's going to do well in the playoffs. Philosophically, it's ridiculous that he sits here and says that. And the fact that he has not gone out and made an absolute bold trade in the case of a Mitch Marner, done something to affect some change, is somewhat shocking. And I'm assuming he's put an old shanty plan into danger as well. This is an absolute disaster, what he's constructed, and it's only getting worse by the year. There is nothing that points to them having any playoff success next year, and I don't feel like they're on the verge.
Well, you know, until you've done it, you haven't done it, if that makes any sense.
But right? I don't feel like they're Tampa Bay or Washington, though, where they were knocking on a door. I don't feel the foundation and theory of the way they're built makes any sense. And every year they continue to lose the pieces of the Kadris, the Browns, the Hymans, the foot soldiers that actually complement what they have. And I'm not even sure the compliment what they have works. So, as I said, and if you're going to go with Jack Campbell as your number one, Freddie Anderson walks out the door, JR, I understand that. And Washington went through it for a long time. Tampa said, okay, now final piece, we're going to get Coleman and Goudreau. I understood it. You try different things every year. That's not what happened in Toronto. They're in survival mode, and they're banking on four real good players and a couple of defensemen.
Yeah, and they're at the stage now where, you know, they have exhausted much of their draft capital. They've only got three picks this year and I think four next year. They still have their first rounder next year that they could trade, but, you know, their minor league system now in terms of draft picks, they've got Sandin, who they probably really need to take the place of Morgan Rielly, who is going to be the next guy to leave at the end of next year because they can't probably afford him. And they've got Nick Robertson, who, you know, looks like he's going to be a good player at some stage as maybe trade commodities if you wanted to, you know, again, try to push it over the top at the trade deadline next year. But I'm not saying that the window is closing on Toronto, but, you know, you only have so much of a period of time, in my opinion, in a salary cap world to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And it's maybe 3 to 4 years. And it feels like for Toronto, two of those years have already passed.
Oh, yeah.
And so time is running short here to get it done. And so do you risk even more of your future to try and push it over the top this coming season? Because after that, again, there's just more and more people walking out the door.
Yeah, and it may be a small market. Well, I won't say small market. I'll go to Canadian, JR. It might be a study of Tampa Bay's window has stayed open forever on the appearance of a few things. Very, very lucky to have a no-tax state. So what they're able to do financially, but at the same time, Tampa Bay, what they've done within their system, the trades they've made, the smart hockey moves, that's one model. Then you look to Toronto, it almost is a mirror image of the Winnipeg Jets, and I don't even put as much fault on Chevy other than Myers to all of a sudden Trouba wanting to leave, Sherratt, now that's a bad one, Bufflin retiring. The deterioration of the Winnipeg Jets and what they're left with is almost a model of what Toronto has now gone to, but I think a lot of it has been self-inflicted in Toronto. So look at both of those franchises, and you've said that, JR, how quickly the window has come for them, and I do think the Toronto Maple Leafs window is closing. Like, I'm not saying that they can't have a decent playoff. I do not look at any circumstance where that club, as it sits right now, is going to go four rounds in the National Hockey League playoffs and win a Stanley Cup. It ain't happening.
The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators will open the season for Ottawa, at least. By the way, the NHL schedule came out, if you didn't see last night, and it will be the Sens and the Leafs in Ottawa's home opener on Thursday, October the 14th. And Sens will get a little bit of an advantage because the Leafs will actually open their season the night before against the Montreal Canadiens. So Ottawa gets Toronto on the second half of a back-to-back. And then the Sens and Leafs will also play after playing Thursday here in Toronto on the first Saturday night of the season as well. So the schedule, by the way, out as well. And full 82 games back to Atlantic Division. So it's four games each against Montreal, Toronto, Boston, Tampa, and Florida, and then three games against Detroit and Buffalo, and then home and away against the Western Conference, and three games each against all the teams in the Metro Division.
Yeah, and got to say, for a year like this, and also preseason, you can look at some sports, JR, and back in the day in the National Hockey League, first three or four games meant nothing. It was all kids from junior and tryouts and people like me that got games who would never play in the National Hockey League, and actually had Velcro on the back of my jersey for the name going on. What has happened now, you get to see a lot, and for Ottawa, where they're at, we're going to see either the exact team or some of the high-end prospects next year that, I think for starving hockey fans like myself, I'm actually very interested to watch Ottawa in the preseason and see Mr. Murray and Mr. White and Mr. Dadd and Mr. Tierney, along with all the other young players, as to where is kind of the foundation and, after a preseason and training camp, what is it going to look like? No more excuses here come regular season. Last year was supposed to, and again, it's hype as well, but Pierre Dorion said best training camp he's ever seen. It was mass chaos, both in system, personnel, and everything for Ottawa to start the year. That should all be eliminated.
All right, and also just one other thing on the schedule for Ottawa, and they do play better hockey at home, as most teams do. They play 12 of their first 18 games at home. So, again, the American teams don't like to play at home when they play in the fall because it's football, high school football season, et cetera, college football season. So the schedule usually tips itself to the Canadian team starting with a lot of home games. So Ottawa does 12 of the first 18 at home. So, again, if everything goes according to plan, they should be able to get off to a decent start record-wise as well.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even – I'm not going to go down the path of coach, manager, anything else in Ottawa. But I think if you sat down, JR, and looked at maybe – well, not going to go – I'll go American Thanksgiving, you know, I think, hey, there's a pivotal time there where I'm assuming the owner is looking and saying, hey, here's basically what we're looking at, whether it's 10 games, 15 games, 18 games, end of November, whatever it is, there's probably a mark in his mind as to where he wants to see his hockey club at, or crap's going to hit the fan.
All right, 7:57. Somebody wanted us to, thanks again, to Dave Branch, OHL Commissioner, for joining us. And somebody, when Dave was on, texted me and said, is there any way you guys can revisit Dave's attempt to? We just have
that's
to.
So beautiful.
Mesdames et messieurs, au nom de la Ligue canadienne de hockey, j'aimerais remercier et féliciter la ville de Shawinigan, Le comité organisation to les bénévoles et les fans de Cataract de Shawinigan pour avoir présenté la tournoi Coupe Memorial Mastercard avec beaucoup de succès. Merci beaucoup.
Best ever.
Oh, it is. Ever. It is. And I don't know if this was a dare. I don't know if Dave was drinking. It reminds me of being on a flight in the U.S. when they go to speak French and you're hearing it. But it puts a smile on your face, JR.
It does.
And not that I wouldn't be smiling on a Friday anyway, but it's beautiful. Like, it really is.
It is the beautiful language, and no one speaks it better than Dave Branch. All right, 7:58. If you'd like to play our TSN $1,200 minute, text us right now. And be lucky texter number 90 at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Texter number 90 will play our $1,000 minute. And for $1,000, coming up next on TSN 1200.
NHL teams meet their future. It's round one of the NHL draft. TSN 1200. The Sens play here.
TSN 1200's $1,000 minute.
All right. So we've got our contestant ready to go, I think. My phone line is not lit up. Let's see if we got Randy. No, Randy, we don't have Randy. I don't know what's happening. Can we call Randy back? We had Randy ready to go. Not sure what happened. Maybe he was on the road, whatever. Here's the way the $1,000 minute works, because we got to get Randy back on the line. We're going to give away $1,000 if Randy can go 10 for 10. And Simmer, this is your last day before holidays.
Yep.
So you would like nothing better than for us to give away $1,000. And normally we'd be giving it to you, of course, make sure you had fun on your holidays. So that's the way it goes. But
be nice.
Yeah, well, exactly, because you got travel plans, man. You're going to Collingwood. You're going to okay. We got Randy. All right, we got Randy now. How's it going, Randy? Okay. Do I have Randy?
You.
Okay, there you are. Okay, we got you now. All right.
I'm here.
Okay, good. You ready to play?
I'm good to go.
Okay, Randy, here's the way the contest works. I've got 10 questions. You've got 60 seconds. You go 10 for 10. We're going to give you $1,000 to go into your weekend. Sound good?
Sounds good.
We'll give you $10 per correct answer. Here are the very simple rules to our contest. I need all of your answers by the time the 60-second buzzer goes. I need to accept your first full, complete answer. If you want to, you can pass on a question. If we have time, we'll go back to it. Okay?
Deal.
All right. Randy, we wish you good luck, my friend. We're going to start in 3, 2, 1, go. Other than Stützle, name a Sens first-round draft pick from last year.
Sanderson.
Were the last Summer Olympics held in the United States, Brazil, or Mexico?
Brazil.
Does Brooke Henderson swing the golf club left or right-handed?
Right.
True or false, Zach Hyman scored 20 goals this past season?
False.
Who was the Sens' first ever first-round draft pick?
Yashin.
What team had the first overall pick in last year's draft?
Rangers.
True or false, one of the new Olympic sports this year is skateboarding?
True.
Which team gave Shea Weber the massive offer sheet, which resulted in a 14-year contract?
Flyers.
Name any team that's traded its first-round pick this year.
Boston.
Who did the Blue Jays beat for either of their World Series wins?
Phillies.
All right, we've got our 10 answers. Let's see how Randy did. Let's review. Randy, other than Stützle, name a Sens first-round pick from last year. You said Sanderson. Ridley Gregg would have been the other. You're right there. Last Summer Olympics were in Brazil. You got that one. Brooke Henderson is right-handed. You got that one. Zach Hyman had 15 goals, so that was false. You're right there. Who was the Sens' first-ever first pick? Yashin is correct. Team had the first pick last year. You took a second. Rangers is right. True or false, one of the new Olympic sports is skateboarding. That's true. Who gave Shea Weber the massive offer sheet? It was the Flyers. You got that one right. Name any team that's traded their first-round pick this year. You said the Boston Bruins. There are five teams that have traded their first-round pick. Unfortunately, the Boston Bruins was not one of them. Toronto, Washington, Pittsburgh, the Islanders, and Tampa have traded their first-round picks this year. And who did the Blue Jays beat for either of the World Series wins? The Phillies is right there. Atlanta was the other team. Randy.
Oh,
Randy. Yeah. No, Boston's traded their first pick before, I think, but not this year. That's what cost you the $1,000.
$90, Randy.
I'll take it.
Wow, you're over that pretty easily. Wow, okay. How did you come up with Boston? Was it just a pure guess or what?
Well, I knew they traded for Hall. I knew they had to cough up an asset.
Yeah, that was the famous, infamously gave up the second rounder for Taylor Hall. But, hey, good logic on that. So $90, Randy, is what you got to head into the weekend. Our thanks for listening and playing the game, and have a great day.
Take care.
All right. There we go.
Yeah.
Zimmer, how'd you do in your last play?
Yeah, no, I would have done fine. The one I would have related back to is Tampa Bay, and I wasn't even sure about the years of the picks that they've kind of given on the first rounders. That would have been my fallback. And also say Randy, it reminds me of somebody that's basically, he's on a lie detector machine right there. Like, he is so locked in.
That's right.
Heart rate is right at the perfect, about 70. And oh boy, just locked in and smooth. So he was darn close.
Yeah, anytime you're trying to struggling to come up, whoever won the Stanley Cup is probably a good fallback, right? David Savard, by the way, is who the Lightning gave up the first round pick to Columbus. All right, we'll take a break. Latest news and sports on the way. And we're coming back with our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin, to talk about the upcoming draft weekend, the trades, and all the rumors coming up next on TSN 1200.